And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hey, what's up? Welcome back to Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice, and we are here, as we said, talking about your Toronto Blue Jays on The Athletic, where, if you haven't already, you should go and subscribe, theathletic.com/spinrate. Do that thing right now. Get yourself a tidy discount. Subscribe to the show that we do twice a week. You don't have to subscribe to The Athletic, but I think you should. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, where we do it twice a week. Once, me and Caitlin McGrath, who covers the Blue Jays for The Athletic, and the other show, which is the one you're listening to right now, is me and former Blue Jays all-star Ricky Romero, who joins me from beautiful downtown California. Ricky, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm ready to talk a little bit of what happened last night. Ready to roll, man. Beautiful weather. Be in Toronto this weekend. I'll be in your neck of the woods, so I'm looking forward to being out there for a month and being part of that beautiful country of yours.
It will be Canada Day, which, as I talked about a little bit at the end of the last episode, Canada Day, I saw a really great quote from an Indigenous. I don't want to take the show on too much of a tangent. I do this sometimes too often, but a great quote about the ability for us to celebrate on Canada Day, what it is that makes Canada a great place for the people who live here, while also reflecting on the true nature of Canada, our history of marginalizing First Nations people and a history of racism and the still grappling with the true horrors of the residential school system, all those sorts of things. I think that, you know, the way this MPP who is a First Nations person and an Indigenous man positioned it was like, you know, it's not to allow our guilt or allow us to like wallow, but definitely have those conversations, think and go in with open eyes and recognize what Canada is, what its history is, what its present is, and then what we can do to make its future a more fair and equitable place for everybody who was born here, who moved here, who was a settler, who is native to this land, whatever it might be. So an important opportunity on Canada Day for us to revel and look around and be so excited by and proud to live in and be from an amazing place and to enjoy everything that it has to offer while also continuing to do that work and put our nose to the grindstone every day in an effort to make it the best place it can be, because we're not quite there yet. Canada Day means big things at the Rogers Centre, where the Blue Jays, of course, play which is usually the biggest or one of the most well-attended games of the year. Big party atmosphere. This is a special weekend. Five games over the weekend, as the Blue Jays and Tampa Bay will try to catch up on some of the games that were missed at the beginning of the season due to the owner's lockout. But we're not ready to talk about that yet. What we have to talk about is, even though, so the Blue Jays came into this series against the Boston Red Sox reeling a little bit, losers of three straight series, losing two of three to the Yankees, to Chicago, and then the one that just happened, Milwaukee as well. The Blue Jays have won two in a row against the Boston Red Sox, but boy, it did not feel like that game on Tuesday night was going to go the way that everyone thought it was going to go. A bit of a rocky up and down until, of course, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. saved the day. I think that in the ninth inning, so Vladimir Guerrero Jr. delivered the game-winning hit, but not after Bo Bichette picked up a big hit to drive in Bradley Zimmer, who was pinch running for the MVP of this show, Alejandro Kirk. We will have our Alejandro Kirk segment. Don't you worry about that. I'm talking to you specifically. But in my mind, that series of at-bats from Kirk, Springer, Bichette, and then Guerrero was just truly shows how difficult the Blue Jays offense is to get through when they're all right. Nobody had any home runs. There weren't any laser beams that knocked down the left field fence, but high quality at bats, really good approach, and ended up producing the only result that Blue Jays fans would have accepted after what happened with the bullpen in that game. But just a real like murderer's row in terms of the quality of at bats and the quality of offense that the Blue Jays are capable of producing from Kirk, Springer, Bichette, and Guerrero. I don't know if what you thought when you were watching them sort of battle through. And again, that really great piece of hitting that you can, I love to see it from Bichette when he goes up there knowing that's his plan. When he's got a plan and he can really execute on that plan, he could be as good as everyone, as anyone.
Yeah, and you mentioned it right there with Bo and Springer and Vladdy. It's not like they hit the ball on the button. You know, it was like they just found the holes. And when you have a plan like that, which is these guys usually do, you find holes like that. And we've seen where the Blue Jays have been on the other end, where they've hit balls hard right at guys. So maybe this is the little bit of the ship turning around and. Again, it's baseball. You hit the ball where it's pitched, and sometimes, most of the time, you get rewarded for that. And it's when you're trying to do a little bit too much, and you can just tell that last at bat by Vladdy. He wasn't trying to do too much. He was, I believe, he was ahead in the count, and he might have gotten beat a little bit with that fastball, but it just found the hole. It found the six hole down there, and we're off to the races. But yeah, everything, you know, obviously you mentioned Alejandro Kirk, and we have some fun with that, but the tone setter, he comes in, has a good at bat. He's probably the only one out of those four guys that hit the ball the hardest in that inning. And just the way that he, again, we talk about his plate discipline. He knows his plan. He knows what he's got to do, and he knows what he has to do in that situation. And he came in, executed, and you followed by the other guys. You bring in the firepower from Springer to Bo and to Guerrero. That's something nobody wants to see. And you can just sense it. I don't know about you, but watching the game, you can just sense that it was going to be trending in the Blue Jays direction. And I mean, it's no secret. Boston's missing one of their key guys in the bullpen. And I mean, it was kind of funny, or not funny, but if you went on Twitter and you searched that pitcher's name, it was like, holy smokes, the people in Boston were not happy. But again, it's the approach and how they go about their business, and how they it's, you know, it's Springer and Bo not trying to hit the two run walk off home run. It's like, okay, I'm gonna take what the game gives me. And when you put up good at bats like that, again, I'm a firm believer that this game will reward you most of the time.
I think that the good at bats piece is really key, right? With, I think, Kirk and Springer, and then Vlad in particular. They had great at-bats in that they, you know, took some close pitches. They, you know, Vlad got ahead when there were a few pitches that weren't close at all. But, you know, not trying to do too much, not trying to hit the first thing that they saw that was hit a bull in an attempt to try to win the game. And then because, you know, the Bichette at-bat is different in that Bichette had an idea, he had a plan, and when he got there and he saw an ideal pitch to do what seemed like it was his plan all along, to try to go the other way, try to hit the ball hard. You know, he's obviously going to be a tough guy to double up because he runs well, but you know, that was the one where as long as they were able to stay out of the double play there, they were probably going to be good to go in my mind. And then when Vlad comes up, it's like, okay, well, this is over. Like, forget it.
Were you pretty surprised? I was. Were you pretty surprised on how much they shifted Bichette last night?
Yeah. I mean, on the infield, yes. In the outfield,
because he goes the other way really well, I think, and he's one of the guys that actually can hit a home run opposite field. Not very many guys can, but it almost seems like even Espinal, they were shifting him, which was kind of weird. I was like, what? What is going on? What do they got? What do they got? And again, Espinal is a guy that can handle the bat. I think he's one of those guys that can hit the ball the other way. He can find a hole. He can pull if he needs to pull. But Bichette, I feel like, is a really good opposite hitter type guy. And it was just weird that they're shifting. I mean, they got beat right there by the shift. And I thought that was pretty interesting.
He makes sense as a guy who would shift similar to the way the Blue Jays shift their outfielders. I think that if the Blue Jays faced Bo Bichette, they would do exactly that, right? If he pulls it, it's going to go over the fence. But if he goes the other way, he's got a ton of power to that right field alley, right? As we've all seen, you know, over the last couple of years. And like you said, he can go deep to the opposite field, which, you know, fewer and fewer guys are able to do these days. So seeing them that shift kind of go so aggressively on the pull side on the infield, a little bit interesting. But you know, we haven't really talked about Vlad Guerrero Jr. that much recently. He's obviously having a great month of June. You know, he's got 9 home runs. Is that true? 9 home runs in June. Damn. You know, OPS way over, you know, over 1,000 after coming back from May. But now it's been revealed that he has been favoring his wrist for, well, in his words, through Shai Davidi of Sportsnet, something he's probably going to have to manage his entire career. But it kind of maybe shed some more light on what Vlad was doing when he was, you know, had a tough June and, you know, below average and not what we expect from him. But great to see him back hitting the ball hard, hitting the ball over the fence, as I said, 9 home runs in June, and then being able to deliver that big hit, fighting it off. And still, again, those balls that squeak through, so to speak, for the Blue Jays infield, it's testament to why you hit the ball hard. Even if you hit the ball hard on the ground, it just becomes that much harder to field. And it's just something that Vlad and Bo as well do really well, and good things come out of it. But yeah, great to see a real turnaround and some really strong results for Vlad here in June.
Yeah, and it's been, you're right, you mentioned 9 home runs, and it's almost been like it's been the quietest 9 home runs that he's hit because he had a tough May. But I think what the best part about it, Drew, for me, was him telling Charlie that the game was over before he went up to hit. Like, that to me is just like, this kid's got it. He was made for this stage, man. And I tweeted about that yesterday. He really was. And I mean, it almost feels like he's got more than 2 walk-off hits in his career. And I'm going to give him the Montreal one too. So that's 3, even though
it was Montreal one counts for sure. That counts for sure. That was such a grim season for the Blue Jays that was like the highlight of the year in 2019. That was the best moment of the Blue Jays season. And it happened in spring training.
But seriously, it's one of those things where he did that. And it was almost like every Blue Jay fan took a deep breath, took it all in, and was like, wow, if this is what the future lies for us as fans ahead, then we were really excited. And that's why there was so much hype around him when he came up. And it's, to me, when I see him last night in that at bat, and you can just tell the way he's taking pitches, it's almost like he's going to rise to the occasion. Mm. And not every hitter can do that, because some, you know, obviously the pressure gets to them and they want to end it, but they don't. And this guy, it's almost like, I got this. Like, I know what I got to do. I know I ain't got to do too much, and I'm going to go out there and execute. And again, to be able to call your shot, it just doesn't, guys don't just say that, you know. There's yeah, always a little bit of tension. Obviously, you know, they were up and they're supposed to win this game, and now they're tied, and it just seems with him, the adversity doesn't face him. It almost seems like after he had that conversation with Springer about like, are you having fun? Like, you know, get back to having fun. Get back mm-hmm. to being who you are. It's almost like it's kind of shifted a little bit for him. He's a huge leader in that clubhouse, and he's the guy, one of the guys that they look up to. And when you see at the end of the dugout, he's the guy, the life of the party most of the time. He's the guy at post games, you know, drenching the players and Hazel. So it almost seems like everyone wants him to get the walk off because they want to get payback, and you know, and
Hazel's got to get him. They got to get Hazel a bucket and let her dump it right onto him.
They do,
just
yeah.
Yourself. Like, cut out the middleman.
That would be great. But yeah, I mean, he's a guy that loves that spotlight, and you love to see that, especially over a young kid like him.
Well, and obviously he's so talented, but when he's seeing the ball well and his timing is good, he can be that confident. He can go up there and watch, I can't remember the guy's name, watch him pitch and be like, okay, there's nothing he's got that I can't handle.
Yeah, so, Hector Robles, yeah.
Oh, it was Robles, that's right. They had made the pitching change. You know, Robles was hard, right? But to be able to go in there confidently and be like, I know I'm seeing the ball well, I know my timing feels good, you know, this is done. You know, when it comes in the moment, I think it just comes back to that. Like, he's just so good, but not afraid to screw up, and not afraid to, not that he's not going to screw up, but it also reminded me of that Montreal home run. That home run came off of Jack Flaherty, who was not just some like roster guy at the end of the, you know.
Oh, was it really? Wow. Yeah. I didn't even, yeah,
future,
I didn't even realize.
Future Blue Jay Jack Flaherty, if you ask me, but that's just neither here nor there.
He needs to get healthy, man. Holy smokes.
He can do that? Break. Toronto. We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, just a great night. But let's do Kirk. Now we got to talk about Kirk even more. Just again, having an amazing season. I think he's also the Blue Jays' best pinch hitter, a guy who comes up and is just, talk about a guy who's not fazed by the moment. Talk about a guy who's seeing the ball well. He's everything and more right now. Just showing that power, hitting the ball so hard, running away with the All-Star votes as well, which is not a huge thing personally for me. Like, I don't, you know, the ballot, All-Star voting can gets carried away, especially online. I'll say this. In the day, this is me sounding old now, but when you had to go to the ballpark and they give you the little punch card and you had to punch those things out.
I like those.
That was so fun. It was tactile, but also it made it hard to like flood the ballot box like we see right now online. And these partnerships like the Dodgers and the Angels fans are trying to come together to get Trey Turner and Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout in the All-Star game, which
the issue that I have with it, and you're right, like it's cool that fans get involved and everything, but like Tatis being like fourth or fifth, you know, mm-hmm. like come on, people, like yeah. come on, like he hasn't played a game. Let's stop that. That's where I have a bit of an issue, because there's guys mm-hmm. that are very well deserving that should be ahead of that, you know. But when this guy, when you look at it, and he's got like over 300,000 votes, it's just yeah. like, or 400,000 or whatever he's got, it's like he hasn't played a game, like but you know what, it's part of the fan interaction, and I'm glad Kirk is getting everything he deserves. He's getting his flowers right now, as we say. And and our good friend Chris Black tweeted out this morning, he said, Alejandro Kirk, since May 24th, 24 starts, 400 batting average, .491 on base percentage, 28 runs, 24 RBIs. That's insane, man.
That is insane. Even like, his numbers for the whole year are insane. And then you look at his, and then I'm like, right now I'm looking at a StatCast page, and it's like, there's nothing about it that is fake. You know, sometimes guys can run into it for a couple weeks and they put together a hot streak and you know, you can see maybe the foundation isn't as strong, but like Kirk's strikeout rate is in the 98th percentile. His hard hit rate is in the 77th percentile. His average exit velocity is in the 84th percentile. His whiff rate's 95th percentile. Like it's as real as it gets, right? His ability to cover the plate, his ability to put the bat on the ball and square it up. And, you know, the guys on my baseball team, they were talking about it last week, and they're like, his bat is in the zone forever. Like it feels like the barrel of his bat is just in the strike zone, in the hitting zone for so long. And he's just got amazing hand-eye coordination as well. And pitch recognition. He doesn't get fooled. It's crazy. It's really, really something else. But let me ask you this. This is the loaded question I'm going to ask you that I wrote in here. So
we love
Alejandro Kirk. We love Alejandro Kirk. But the Angels, of course, are falling apart. Shohei Ohtani is having almost, in some ways, a better season than last year. Maybe in a hypothetical world, the Angels decide they're going to trade to Shohei Ohtani, because he's like, you know what, this franchise is a joke. I can't re-sign here. I'm out. They say, hey, Ross, you give us Kirk, we'll give you Ohtani.
I hate you right now, man.
Yeah, that's
why are you doing this to me?
It's rough. Now, this is
El Capitan. He has captured the hearts of the Canadian people, man. Like, come on. I mean, but on the flip side, you're getting one of the best hitters, home run hitters in baseball, a guy who can pump 98. If Kirk can pump 98, 99, 100, then I'd be like, okay, that's a fair trade, but that's kind of an unfair trade right there, man.
2 miles an hour. Shohei Ohtani's fastball is throwing it harder this year than he did last year.
Wow.
He's added two ticks, which is insane. That's not fair. It would never happen. You know, no matter how bad the Angels get, they're never going to. How do you trade? You can't. How do you trade Shohei Ohtani? You can't. How do you look yourself in the mirror? How do you look yourself in the mirror and be like, I traded Shohei Ohtani?
Yeah, it's they're a mess here in Anaheim, man. A complete mess. Even yesterday, they jump out to a lead against Johnny Cueto. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I mean, that means they're going to cruise. And that's all they got, you know, home runs from Trout and Ohtani. And you're just like.
Ohtani had three hits and I think two walks. And it didn't make an out all night, nothing. I don't know if you saw the video of Trout realizing that his own pitcher was tipping his pitches.
Tipping pitches,
and he's like,
yeah.
Out in the center field, like, come on! Poor guy. But anyway.
I really do wonder what's going to happen there. But yeah, anyway, yeah, no, back to Kirk again. I mean, I think we talk a lot about his hitting, Drew, and one of the things that where he's improving, we talked about this earlier in the season, but it almost seems like he keeps getting better and better and better, and it's the catching ability. I think he's proved a lot of people wrong because it was like that was a big question. Can he catch? Can he handle a staff? And it seems like with Jansen out, he's completely carried that load. Obviously, Moreno has been sprinkled in a few times here and there, but you can just see the how comfortable hitter or pitchers are throwing to him. And then when you see, you know, how he's stealing strikes from time to time, his pop times, you know, throwing to second base and stuff like that, that side of it too. I mean, he's almost like he's this year, he's coming into his own. He's more of a complete catcher rather than just an offensive catcher. And that's big. When you're able to have both, I mean, so usually you get a defensive catcher that can't hit or an offensive catcher that can hit and can't really catch. But it's almost like with him, you're getting the full package, and that's good stuff for him and the Jays.
His pitch receiving, according to StatCast, is in the 96th percentile. He's already added four full runs with his receiving, with his framing. You know, as we've spoken about many times here before, he's really, really strong at the bottom of the zone. As well as, you know, in the sort of bottom corners and you know, just overall. But that those pitches at the bottom of the zone are huge. That's where so many of those strikes are available, when you can, you know, make sure that those pitches that are at or right around the knee or the kind of the base of the kneecap, you know, get those pitches presented as strikes. The throwing thing is nice and all. But so let me ask you, what do you think, you know, in terms of what? When you're looking at a defensive catcher, obviously you like the whole package, which I think that both he and Moreno and Danny Jansen all are, like, all around good defensive catchers. But my thing remains that there's one aspect that I think is more important than the rest. What do you agree? I guess is what I'm trying to say. Do you think the pitch receiving is the most important thing a catcher can do?
Pitch calling.
Yeah.
How you're able to prepare for a game, the game plan that you're going to have, how you're going to be able to, let's say, you know, Alec Manoah is having an off day. How are you going to guide him? If he's slider is not there, how are you going to guide him through 6-7 innings, you know, picking and choosing when you throw that slider? That to me is where the cerebral part of a catcher becomes super important.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to guide my starter? When I know he's not in his A game, how do we set up certain pitches so that he gets a feel for his slider again, so that he trusts it again? Because it happens a lot of the times when you're pitching, and like if I didn't have my changeup, I'm like, okay, my catchers are gonna have to guide me through this, and we're gonna have to set it up to throw it. We can't just throw it, and keep falling behind. So that to me is the important part, and it seems like his pitch calling and stuff like that, the game plan has gotten better, and I feel like that's. That's one of the things that's important for me.
I think so too. And I think that Monday night start against the Red Sox was the kind of perfect marriage of those two things. When he's got Kevin Gausman on the mound, and Kevin Gausman and the team have been working to adjust his become less predictable. And he was throwing more and more fastballs down in the zone. I think he got 9 called strikes with his fastball in the lower third of the zone, which is so huge, because all it does is make that changeup that much more dangerous. Makes it too, you can't take it anymore. Right. Yeah. You can't take that pitch that looks like a fastball at the bottom of the zone. And so when you've got Kirk, who's A, getting the buy-in from the pitcher as well as, you know, with everybody else, but calling for those pitches down there. Kirk has the ability to then receive the ones that are close that make it that much, have to keep batters that much more honest, where they're like, even if it's not a strike, this kid's getting the calls back there. So I can't just lay off and be like, well, there's a splitter at the bottom of the zone. So
yeah,
a really good example of how those two things can all work together.
Yeah. And the one thing about Gausman too, you mentioned, obviously he pitched down in the zone, but he pitched up in the zone effectively too, when he was coming up and in, up and in, up and in. It reminded me a bit of old school pitching, where I'm going to back the guy off and I'm going to get some swings and misses up in the zone. And then it's going to set me up for that changeup down and away. And when you're able to do that and change those eyesights, which is something you rarely see nowadays, it's more just like, we're going to attack one zone, which is, I feel like Gausman for a little bit was like you mentioned, it was like very predictable. He's going to go to the changeup or the splitter. And it just seemed like his game plan completely changed this last start, where it was like, I'm going to throw up in the zone and I'm going to dot down and away 98. And then I'm going to throw that nasty splitter off of that. So,
and it also makes it hard. And he went to the slider, I think maybe later in the game, more like the third time or second or third time through the order, he started to offer that slider in there a little bit more. And I thought, it might have been Caleb Joseph who mentioned that he throws at more against the Red Sox than almost any other team so far this year. Joseph also had a really interesting insight about when he was with the Orioles, and they wanted Gausman to only throw down and away. Like you said, just attack one zone, throw everything down in that spot, which is interesting. Which seems odd, because it's weird that it is old school now. Like, throw your fastball up in the zone is like, oh, what is it, 2014 now? Whoa. But, and especially it's noteworthy to me, like the guys that he was doing that to, right? You know, a guy like Bobby Dalbec, who's probably not really demonstrated the ability to like hit a big league fastball, especially when it's located in a tough spot. And he started inching them in and inching them in. And like, they're, you know, too close to take, but also, you know, not a pitch that guy in particular has demonstrated, you know, the ability to do a lot with. So great stuff from Kirk. Great stuff. Great outing, of course, from Gausman. And now the one thing I do want to talk about, speaking of pitch selection, I don't know how closely you were watching last night. I was a little bit surprised with the way that Tim Mesa pitched last night, in particular in that eighth inning He just, it was just sinker. He threw one slider all night. I don't know. I was really surprised. And it's, you know, he got Trevor Story to strike out, but then I can't believe that you're going to be able to get the strikeout or get what you need by just throwing the one pitch all over and over. I don't know if you think they have just double play in their mind the whole time? Like, we're just going to get them to roll over. We're going to keep throwing these sinkers away and we're going to get right with one of them. But I don't know. I was a little bit surprised, and not maybe disappointed isn't the right word, but just surprised at the pitch selection in that from Mesa in particular.
Yeah. And it can be, again, the amount of data these guys have in front of them, and you're right. They were probably chasing that double play. They're trying to keep that run from scoring. I believe there was a runner in scoring position, right?
Yeah. It was first and second.
So, I'm guessing when you're throwing that sinker down in a way, you're hoping that he kind of gets out and roll over. And Trevor Story is a guy that can hit the ball out of the ballpark. So I think there were, I heard a reliever, Casey Jansen, once say, if I'm going to get beat, I'm going to get beat away. I don't want to get beat inside late in the game. And I feel like that's probably the mentality that Mesa was taking. Like, I'm like, if he's going to beat me, if he takes me opposite field, then you tip your hat off to him. But I'm not going to let him beat me inside. And unless you set it up, but it almost seems like Mesa, they were probably chasing that double play, and obviously he got him to strike out.
They got Story, but then Vasquez was the one that they left sinkers right over the heart, and then he got it. More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man of the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man of the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The question that something that was on a lot of people's minds, and sort of, I don't want to put it on Trent Thornton specifically, but I liked the idea. Charlie Montoyo brings Trent Thornton in the seventh inning. He's got the bottom of the Red Sox lineup, which then, of course, has Ref Snyder at the top of the order. I don't think that's a bad idea to try to steal those outs when your bullpen is short-staffed, guys are overworked, you don't have David Phelps to go to, you have already used Adam Simber, don't have Jimmy Garcia. I like the idea. It's just really disappointing, and you feel for Thornton that he just wasn't able to get the job done, and ends up giving up a home run, as well as walking Franchi Cordero. What do you think? Are you on board with the idea of using Thornton to get those outs right there?
Yeah, Drew. People are like shitting on Charlie, but I'm like, who else are you supposed to bring in that situation? Mm-hmm. Like you look at that bullpen top to bottom right now, and you're like, who am I going to bring in? So obviously, yes, I'm with you. Like the idea of trying to steal three outs, and let's face it, Trent Thornton hasn't been bad. I mean, he had one mm-hmm. bad outing against the New York Yankees, and that was it. You take that away, he's been pretty solid. Mm-hmm. And you expect him to go out there and get those three outs. He should get the job done. He would tell you if you put a mic in front of his mouth right now and you said, what do you got? He'd be like, I got to get the job done right there. Nobody is it's one of those things where he's not making any excuses. He'll tell you, I should get the job done. And you don't expect Rob Ref Snyder to be the guy to take you deep. But again, you can't let your guard down against any hitter. I don't care who it is. And if you throw a fastball that's right down the middle, these big league hitters will make you pay. But I don't disagree with
like directly down the middle, like the middle of the middle, the poor guy.
And I don't blame them one bit for bringing in Thornton. If there was a guy that I would have liked was David Phelps, but he had pitched back to back days, so mm-hmm. you couldn't really bring him in. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, there's nobody really else that you would have brought in that situation.
No, I really think that the way the whole thing progressed, like he brought in Simber to face better hitters, right? He used a better reliever, a guy more suitable to the situation in the sixth inning, which, you know, this is what you love. Not love, but for years it was just like your job, you were the eighth inning guy, you were the seventh inning guy. But this was like, this is a job for Simber, right? It's not as high leverage, but this is a more important stretch of the batting order. And it worked out, I think, perfectly. And again, I don't think you can kill Charlie. I think it's just a reflection of where the bullpen is right now with all of the injuries, with some of the underperformance, most of the injuries, you know, sometimes suggesting, you know, underperformance, whatever. But you like you said, you need Thornton to do the job. And unfortunately he mm-hmm. didn't. And like you said, no one knows it more than him, but it's just a sign that they need more help back there.
And this is me being a starter, having the starter's mentality. I look at Stripling, 81 pitches through five. Mm-hmm. Do I try and squeeze maybe one more out of him? Mm-hmm. Possibly. You know, obviously, there's a whole thing about, you know, maybe facing the lineup a third time through and all that. But 81 pitches, it seems like he's handled that workload pretty good. So maybe me personally, again, being a starter, I'm going to try and squeeze one more out of him. Give me six.
Mm-hmm. But that comes back to that. Okay, do you that idea? Are you are you thinking only about the pitch count, or are you thinking about, you know, who he's got to get, right? So again, yeah. I hear you, but at the same time, that's a big part of the game, right? Mm-hmm. You need Simber mm-hmm. to get JD Martinez. You need him to get Story and Verdugo, whoever yeah. else. Oh, and Bogarts. Like that's as good as that Red Sox lineup gets. You know, mm-hmm. you've got through Devers, and now you got to do this. And again, I don't have any problem with the way that Charlie worked it. No. Again, I think it worked perfect. You know, that's if you had to draw it up, you know, at the beginning of the day, like, okay, here's the plan. Let's see if we can get through. And depending on where we are in the lineup, it's either 5 or 6 for Stripling, but disappointing. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because they fucking won.
They won. That's all that matters. And
yeah.
And it's crazy when you see that that division, dude. They went from like being in second place to being in fourth place to being in second. Like, it's just, I feel like we're gonna see this till one of them kind of gets on a roll and kind of runs away with it. That's not the Yankees, obviously, because they're just on a stupid level. That
they've won 50 of their first 75 games. They are the second team to do that here in this century. They are the 10th team to do it ever. And most of those teams were before integration and in the dead ball era. Like, before the dead ball and then before integration. So a very, very different story. So it's the 98 Yankees, the 2001 Mariners, and now the 2022 Yankees, who are doing so while playing Joey Gallo every day, who can't even buy a hit, the poor guy.
Dude, yeah. I feel bad for the Yankees.
I feel bad for Joey Gallo because he should be on the Blue Jays when none of this would be happening. He'd be thriving and surviving as a member of the Blue Jays. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, yeah, but it just makes this division, and Dave Roberts, I've heard him quotes about him talking about how the NL West is the toughest division in baseball, but he can save that, you know?
Okay, buddy.
He's like, yeah, every night we're in a battle. You look at the AL East, it's not the NL West. And I'm like, you're right, it's not. Like, yeah. The last place team in this division can be a second place team in any other division. And that's the Baltimore Orioles, who have been hot.
If the Baltimore Orioles finish with a winning record, I will not be surprised.
No, me either.
Their offense is ridiculous. They have a lot of talented ballplayers in that offense. They need, obviously, a lot of pitchers, but they can hit. They can hit. Yep. The Blue Jays can really hit. But before we get to that, I do want to talk about two things for the bullpen. Number one, Nate Pearson has been shelved for 3 to 4 weeks with a lat strain. It came out that he, when he came out of the game previously, after just a couple pitches, now he is not going to even be throwing for 3 or 4 weeks. Just, man, I really feel for him, but I really don't think that if you're a Blue Jays fan in particular, you can't have any expectations when it comes to Nate Pearson. Anything you get from Nate Pearson from here moving forward has got to feel like a bonus, because he just can't stay healthy, and it's not for a lack of effort, and it's not that he's not tough, but he just is snake bit and is hurt a lot, and I really feel for him. But you can't, you as a fan, I don't think any of us as fans can expect anything from him, and I think the Blue Jays would be foolish to not include him in their plans, but include him in their calculations. Like, well, when Pearson's back, like that, you can't even assume that you're going to see him in the big leagues for a single pitch this year, because he just hasn't been able to stay on the field.
Yeah, and you mentioned 3 to 4 weeks. That's just to rest, and then it's mm-hmm. another thing to go through a throwing program, and then another thing to go through facing hitters, and then get in a game, get in a rehab game, and then. So, yeah, I mean, if you put that all together, he's probably out for at least two and a half months. Yeah, mm-hmm. And obviously, he's a guy they're going to take it easy with, because they still are hoping that something happens with him. But as of right now, yeah, you can rely on him. And in spring training, we were talking about him differently, maybe being a difference maker, you know, at this point in the season, because this is when they would need him. This is when they would need a starter, you know, if mm-hmm. he was going to go that direction. And obviously, with, you know, the struggles that Kikuchi has had and Berrios has had, it's like, you know, they need a guy, either whether it was long relief or come in and do a couple spot starts, stuff like that. He was probably going to be that guy. But right now, obviously, the most important thing for him is to just go and get healthy and mm-hmm. take his time. I mean, if you continue to rush through things, and I'm not saying he is. It's take his time. He's still young and he's still got a great arm. So it's just getting back on the health side of things, getting good and see where it takes him from there. Obviously, he's a guy that you can't trade at this point because you're not going to get anything.
No.
So
yeah. I think they've already invested so much in him there's no point in trading him, right? I think it's just like you see if you can get him right. But maybe there's a change of scenery that would help him to be healthier if there's another team that has the ability to, I don't know, but the Blue Jays are kind of in the leading edge of some of that stuff in the training and the, so.
Yeah.
You just hope that he can get healthy and have a good career, but I don't think expectations are the word that I would ever use.
And again, if I'm a AAA guy right now, Drew, a starter or a guy that's up and coming, like I'm looking at this, you know, there's going to be opportunities. If Kikuchi keeps, they can't keep running him out there every fifth day if this keeps happening. You know, you hope that it does turn around for him and he kind of gets on a roll. But even Berrios, you know, like, especially when they follow them back to back right now, like if they're going to be having, like we saw the effects of that and how much it can hurt a bullpen, you know, for both of them to go back to back short outings and then the bullpen having to cover so many innings. If I'm a AAA guy or even a AA guy and I'm dealing, I'm kind of looking at that as a big opportunity for me to come up and be a difference maker. And that's just me talking as a young prospect or a guy that can possibly go, you know, get a call up. So, you know,
like maybe your name is Zulueta and you were just promoted to AA and you got a real live arm and there's a lot of maybe hope that a good showing at AA and you know if it plays there, why wouldn't it play in the big leagues? Right?
Exactly.
If you're throwing hard, why not?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, all that stuff goes into effect, and I'm sure the Blue Jays are definitely yes. We can look at trades, possible trades, and stuff like that, but you got to have something in the farm system too that can be a difference maker, a guy that you can look at and be like, man, this we can use this guy up in the big leagues. And they've done it before. You know, they're obviously they did it with the Kirk, they did it with the Manoah, who never really pitched in AA or AAA. If you're down there and you're grinding it out, I mean, you're probably a lot closer than you think with all the struggles we've seen from the staff and from the bullpen.
The famous line, the stuff plays, right? If the stuff plays, the stuff plays. Now, a guy who's maybe not known for his stuff at this stage, but someone we've talked about before who has not been officially added to the Blue Jays roster, but is in Toronto, is rocking Blue Jays stuff and throwing bullpen. Sergio Romo seems like he's about to join the Blue Jays on a major league deal. Again, not the savior, not the guy who's going to come in and be the difference maker, not going to push Jordan Romano out of the ninth inning, but a guy who knows how to get outs and maybe a guy you could have in a, you know, Monday morning quarterback situation. Maybe it's Sergio Romo who's coming in there to get the bottom of the Red Sox lineup instead of Trent Thornton. So, you know, nothing but upside. There's not a lot of risk in bringing in Sergio Romo. I know a guy who's a veteran has been around and is going to be probably the consummate professional and the kind of guy that the other players would like to be around and like to learn from. I know you have spoken about your friendship with him as well. So I don't expect you to come in here and be like, this is the worst deal of all time.
No, you know what? But the one thing about him, Drew, is big cojones, man. Mm. That guy's always had him because when you look at his stuff, he's never been an overpowering guy ever in his career, ever. Like you go back to his when he was the closer with the Giants when they won the World Series, it wasn't overpowering, but he had big cojones and big stages, and you know he could throw that slider down the middle, and then he could throw it 2 inches off, and then he could throw it 5 inches off, and obviously, again, he's a guy that's at you know later in his career now he's 13, 14 years in and into the big leagues. But if he can bring an attitude to this team, if he can bring out the FU out of this team, I'm all for it. And I love the signing. I really do. And I'm not saying that just because he's my friend or anything like that, but I just, this team, I think has all the potential, but I don't know about you, but I almost feel like they're still searching for that identity and who they are as a team. And this is a guy that can definitely come in and do that.
I think that the position players have it, you know, with the Barrio and the jacket, and like they're really tight. And like you said, with the thing with Vlad about getting that advice from Springer about getting back to having fun, I don't know that necessarily the relievers in particular maybe don't have that same kind of identity. They don't get the camera on them quite as much. I mean, the starters have the thing where they all go together and they all walk out from the bullpen to the dugout together. So maybe a little bit more of personality in the bullpen isn't a bad thing. Also, speaking of big balls, Sergio Romo, one of the ballsiest things I've ever seen was at the World Series parade in 2012 wearing "I Just Look Illegal" shirt to celebrate. You gotta love it. You know, you want to talk about that?
I love it, man. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's that type of guy. Like you said, he might bring a little bit of personality into that bullpen and loosen those guys up. You never know. I mean, he's a veteran guy. He's seen it all. I mean, godly, man. He's got 3 World Series rings. How much better does it get? You know, even if he had one, he's got 3. And he was part of some great teams. And to me, it's all about veteran presence, the wisdom that they can share down. Maybe he can be a positive influence in Romano, you know, Meza, all those guys. Yeah.
Jordan Romano seems like, and I say this with love, like the weirdest dude in the world. So maybe if somebody could lighten him up a little bit.
Hey, man, last time I saw him, he made me feel really old. He's like, "Ricky, so good to see you. Hey, man, I remember here, like, when I was here, me and my high school buddies used to come and watch you pitch whenever we'd get the chance." I was like, "God, Lee, Jordan, you just made me feel like I'm like 60 years old."
That's awesome.
But again, yeah, I mean, the Romo thing, the Romo sign, or it hasn't become official yet, but I think it brings a little bit of personality. And again, people were mentioning like, "Oh, he was DFA'd for a reason." Well, shoot, a lot of players are DFA'd, you know, and if you strike a little bit of gold, and Drew, let's face it, we need outs out of that pen. And if he can come in and get us 3 outs, then solid. I don't care how he does it, where he does it. And yeah,
that's exactly right. And you know, I talked about this off the top with Kirk about how you look at Kirk's numbers and they're very real, and all of his, you know, underlying supporting, you know, kind of foundational metrics are so strong. In the bullpen, in a pennant race with a team that's trying to win the World Series, none of that stuff matters. Doesn't matter if Sergio Romo's entire Statcast page is blue. If he gets 3 outs in the time when he needs them, then that's great. You know, you're not trying to project forward. Like, what's Sergio Romo going to be next year? And is there some kind of stickiness to this ability? Like, doesn't matter. Give me outs and then we'll just take them and we'll figure out what's going to happen next time.
Yeah.
It's a different game. It's a different situation and one that, again, there's not a lot of downside. Not a lot of risk. And if he comes in and is able to do a job and if he can rediscover something with playing on a team that's good and not the Mariners, off we go.
Yeah,
we don't have too much more time. We can prattle on. Is there anything? Let me ask you this. So Canada Day coming up, big start, full house. Looks like it's going to be Jose Berríos' start. What's the thing you're looking for to see if he's going to be the good Jose Berríos or the bad Jose Berríos?
tempo and confidence with him. It almost seems like sometimes when he's out there and he's struggling, it's the trying becomes a little harder. And if you try in the game of baseball, you're fucked, man. You really are. We've seen him at his best when he's got that great slider going and when he's setting it up nicely, because I believe you mentioned in the episode on Monday with Caitlin, he doesn't walk guys. He's a guy that doesn't like, but he gets clobbered when he's in the zone. But I think that's one, it's not being able to locate your pitches. Yeah, he has a good fastball, but if you're throwing it right down the middle, obviously guys are going to tee off. We talked about Trent Thornton. Obviously, if you leave a fastball down the middle, I don't care who the hitter is, it's going to get clobbered in the big leagues. So I'm looking for him to jump ahead, have confidence, have tempo. And that, to me, the tempo is the key with him. When we've seen him at his best, even when he gives up a run or two, boom, he jumps right back on the mound, strike one. And where I think when he starts getting hit around, it's almost like the tempo slows down. He kind of starts looking around and it's like, oh shit, here we go again. And I've been in that side of it and it's not fun, but he's got all the stuff, man. And he's pretty nasty. And July 1st at the stadium is a whole different beast too. I mean, opening day is cool, but July 1st in Canada, I wish I was there too, man. I'm coming in Saturday.
Open. Oh, okay.
Roof open. I got to pitch in it twice, and it was probably one of the best experiences of my career. When the first time I did it was a rookie against the Tampa Bay Rays, and I remember, I think, I had bases loaded, no out, and I got out of the jam in like the 6th or 7th inning. Oh man, I exploded in emotion just because you felt the crowd energy. I mean, when you have bases loaded, you expect to give up a run, maybe two. But man, I still remember that vividly because I bared down and it was like, I remember Cito was our manager and he's like, you want to go one more? And I was like, hell yeah, like let's go after that inning, let's go. And I believe I went six, seven innings, eight innings. I'm not sure. But and then I got to pitch again, I want to say in 11 or 12 against the Phillies. And that was fun too. So it's just a different
atmosphere. That was when Halliday came back, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah, it was when Doc came back. And it was one of those things where, again, it just seems like it's a big party, man. It just makes you feel like I almost felt like I felt Canadian for that day. It just makes you feel so proud when you put on that uniform and you know what you're representing. And again, me, I'm a son of immigrant parents, and it just everything about it and how welcoming you know, obviously Canada was to me, and it was, dude, it's so exciting. It's one of those things that I can't put into words, like getting to get the start on Canada Day. And I remember as a rookie, you don't know. You're like, Canada Day, okay, what the hell is that? You know, like you don't know much about it. And and then you realize that it's a big party. Like people start drinking early, head to the ballpark, and it's like it turns into like a humongous thing. And I remember just walking out of the stadium, just how proud everyone is to be Canadian. And not that any other day is different, because I feel like Canada, you know, Canadians are very proud to be, you know, Canadians. And but it's honestly, it's awesome. It's a great atmosphere. And I hope for his sake, I hope Jose Berrios has the best start he's had as a Blue Jay, because not even the best start, but just go out there and compete and do his thing. Because again, when he's at his best, we've seen it, and he's freaking nasty, man. So
if he
confidence
does,
tempo.
If he does what Ricky Romero did on Canada Day 2009, if he goes eight innings, just four hits and four walks, shutout baseball, lowering his season ERA to 2.85 as well. Damn. getting Pat Burrell to roll over on a little double play ball to end the seventh, and then getting Carl Crawford to fly out with two on in the eighth. That's some big shit right there.
Yeah. We don't see that no more anymore.
Starting pitcher in the eighth inning, guy better be pitching a perfect game. Otherwise, he's sitting down.
Cito was a little bit different, man. He was wired a little bit different, and he was like going to ride your – he's going to ride starters till they – you know, till he really wanted to see you work in and out of trouble. And that's one thing I respected from him. And I really enjoyed that part of it, that challenge of it, of learning how to work out of pressure situations, bases loaded, second and third, first and second. And it just takes you into a different mentality as a pitcher. And either you fold or you go out there and you attack the zone. And I just remember that day being really, really special. Again, I didn't know exactly what the full meaning of it meant, but the more obviously time I spent in Canada, I realized that it was super special. And I wish I would have pitched every single year July 1st. Like, we couldn't wait. Like, honestly, as a team, you're like, oh man, like Canada Day, like this is cool.
That's fun. Not that long ago, how many players — I'll ask you one last question, then we'll get out of here — how many guys from that game are still active today, do you think,
from both sides?
Yeah.
Evan Longoria.
Yeah.
Gabe Kapler is a manager.
He's the manager. You got him out. You got him out. You retired him. He's the manager.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it. That I can see. I mean, Randy Choate's not. He's probably still pitching somewhere. You're getting one guy out at a time somewhere, but not in the bigs.
Don't ever mention Randy Choate to Adam Lynn. Oh, my God.
Give him fits.
Oh, my God. Joe Maddon would, like, every time – and I've talked to Lindy before, and he said every time he saw Randy Choate coming out of the bullpen, he's like, oh, fuck. Like, if you, I don't know, if you want to give me those numbers, I don't think they were very pretty.
He's like LeBron when Kawhi checked in the final that one day.
Yeah.
When he's just like, sees him coming in, he's like, oh, goddamn it. I'll pull it up and we'll discuss it another time. We'll do this. We'll go through. We'll do some. We'll remember some guys. Don't worry. There's going to be a lot of time for us to remember some guys. But until that time, Ricky, I hope you travel safely. I hope you have a great Canada Day while you celebrate. Before you come to Canada, I hope everyone listening, again, has a great Canada Day and uses the time productively and is able to hold both those ideas in your head, that Canada is a great place worth celebrating, but we're not done. There's still lots of work to do. Lots of work for the Blue Jays to do against finishing the series against the Red Sox and then taking on those very same Tampa Bay Rays this weekend. His name is Ricky Romero. My name is Drew Fairservice. We will talk to you next time on Sports.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.